Blog Talk Radio.
What kind of a horse is that? I've never seen a horse like that before.
No, and never will again, I fancy. There's only...
Good evening and welcome to On Point. I'm Don Allen with your host, Mr. Ron Edwards. Hey, Ron, how are you doing today?
Fine, Don. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Had the sound turned down there for a minute, but that's okay. We're here today on June 26th, Saturday, for this edition of On Point with your host again, Don Allen. That's me and Mr. Ron Edwards here in the studio. Yeah, broadcasting live in beautiful city of Minneapolis. A lot of things going on in the national news here. A lot of stories out, Mr. Edwards. Talk about President Obama reasserting his authority.
Yes, Don, and I think that was absolutely needed. I think it was important, particularly based on the attacks coming from the right with respect to a weak presidency, a weak president, a man who doesn't understand what's going on. In other words, he's not keen on the importance of governance, if you will. And that with all the other side issues that, you know, he's not an American citizen, he wasn't born here, all that kind of stuff. But the situation with General Stanley McChrystal, I think, captured and highlighted the importance of a very assertive President Barack Obama. His decision to ask for this four-star general's resignation, I think, was appropriate. He couldn't continue to let the situation fester because the right wing was looking to make political hay out of it going into the elections in November. And it was kind of deja vu for many of those of us who are historians, and that was it was a repeat of when then-President Harry Truman fired the so-called beloved general and hero of the Philippines, Douglas MacArthur, who wanted to escalate the conflict in Korea and actually wanted to bomb dams inside of China and even use nuclear weapons. And Harry Truman, President Truman, indicated that that was not an option. MacArthur played politics with the Congress. He was still a very popular Second World War hero. He challenged Truman, but he made a mistake. Truman had a little bit more toughness than MacArthur figured. Truman summoned him home. I take that back. Truman actually went to Korea and fired him on the spot. And so I saw a lot of historical precedent in this situation over the last week. In this case, the president summoned General Stanley McChrystal back home. They met for, I guess, about 30 minutes or a little less, and then the president announced, as we all know, that the general was submitting his resignation, which really the president gave him a break, because if he would have fired him, there would have been some problems with respect to his pension. And because he didn't have enough time in as a four-star general, he will retire at the pension of a three-star general. But again, the president was magnanimous, really, in his consideration. Now, this brings into play General David Petraeus, also a four-star general, a man who, by the way, was the boss of General McChrystal, as the overall supreme commander, if you will. He was McChrystal's boss. He, for the sake of the service, if you will, as we like to say, has really taken a step kind of down, left his headquarters in Tampa, and is now in Afghanistan taking command of that particular jurisdiction. But most importantly, the president acted decisively, and it has made it difficult for the conservative right to attack him. So I know here in this corner, I certainly applaud the decisiveness, the swiftness, and really the clean manner in which the president handled this most distasteful situation.
Yes, and I was just looking at that. There's a lot of news reports, and a lot of people on the left are happy that he asserted that authority. That just went up in the polls, popularity polls, and everything.
Okay, did he? Okay.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And just going around national news again, I'm looking here. You know, it's hurricane season down there in the Gulf.
Yes,
and,
yes, it is.
Where the oil spill, and some of the latest news says they're going to evacuate from the oil spill site. And I guess they're planning on a mess down there. And they're saying that little has been spent on the oil spill cleanup technology. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that BP has shown a significant weakness with respect to its commitment to technology. You just stated it. They certainly did not put a lot into R&D, research and development, as it pertains to technique, if you will, with respect to, first of all, impending disasters, but then the whole technique and cleanup and et cetera. It was obvious that BP was more concerned with making big, big profit, and it's now coming back to haunt that entire region of the world, if you will, the Gulf Coast, particularly Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida. People in the Pensacola, Florida area are just sick with respect to what's getting ready to happen to their beaches. This spill will then probably move towards Tampa, Sarasota, Bradenton, down towards Fort Myers, where the twins train, and will probably, according to the experts 4 weeks ago, will begin to turn north. And so you're talking about going up the eastern seaboard, and that brings Miami and cities along that particular area of the world into play. So this is really a catastrophe, as we said on last week's program. It is the sad commentary. In the meanwhile, it appears that the fishing industry, particularly shrimp, oysters, and et cetera, are being decimated. And, you know, there was a sad story out of Florida 2 days ago. CBS News reported a ship, fishing ship captain who became so depressed with respect to how he was being lied to and et cetera, committed suicide. And they tell me that the number of calls to the crisis centers in particularly Louisiana and now Alabama and Florida, if you will, has increased almost tenfold, Don. People are extremely depressed. They are angry, but more importantly, they see their world collapsing. They see a total catastrophe as it pertains to their livelihood, et cetera. Businesses are going out of business, if you will. People are losing their assets. You know, boat captains don't see any way to be able to survive into the next fishing season if there's anything left to fish for. You know what I'm saying? So this has been a real catastrophe. I think the president on this one, Don, is going to have to be even you know, more heavy-handed than he has been within the confines and the framework of the Constitution with respect to BP. Okay, I still maintain in this corner that the president and the government has the constitutional authority and legal authority to place some portions of BP in receivership, taking over their operations. That includes the cleanup, that includes the drillings and et cetera. And according to what you said just minutes ago, with the hurricane, we're now anticipating the arrival of the first of a series of hurricanes. This is hurricane season. Apparently, they are forcing some of the oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico to close down. Is that correct?
That is correct. There is a tropical cyclone that's forming in the south area, the southwest area of the Gulf of Mexico, and is headed toward the oil spill area. And that was reported yesterday, June 25th, Friday.
Right. And so those facilities are being required to come offline, as they would say. And that's going to be a serious consequence, because at some point the consumers are going to have the cost of these shutdowns passed on to us. So, you know, we can look forward to probably in October, et cetera, unless they really tighten up, that we'll be paying $3.35, $3.40 for a gallon of gasoline.
Exactly. And one note that I want to give you, our listeners today, if you go to our Blog Talk Radio site, there's actually an ad there for the Matt Antons and Robin Robinson's tutorial ticket. And I would just like to let listeners know that that is a paid ad placed there by the Antons campaign. That is not in any way, shape, or form saying that this program support endorses or asks you to endorse the Antons Robin Robinson campaign. I just wanted to throw that out there. So some of you that have Google Gmail accounts and things like that, you will see that his ads are showing up just about everywhere on the sidebar. Those are paid ads placed there and kind of in an effort to break through social media, in my eyes. I just want to let the listeners know that right off the bat. So now, It's pretty interesting. If there's something if you go to, if you look up some, if you're in the state of Minnesota, if you go to any of the social networking sites, like maybe for instance YouTube and Google video, especially a video that might have in the title, beautiful black women, you will see the ads from the Nintendo Robinson campaign pop up on the bottom of the screen. It's pretty interesting. I've got a story coming up on that pretty shortly in the next couple of days. But moving on this year, we have a lot going on in the city of Minneapolis.
Okay, go right ahead. What's some of your thinking?
Thursday night, attended the school board, the Minneapolis public school board district headquarters building, which is going to be put on the, over there right off Broadway Avenue across from Shiloh Church, and kind of bring some memory and some other potential developments and things that have happened in North Minneapolis, especially. And promises that were made and items of interest in minority inclusion and some of the vehicles that I have online. Our listeners want to go to the site there where you're listening to this and just scroll down. You can see on our blog that there's a series of nine videos that kind of in a nutshell explain what the night was about, the questions that were met by silence. And a lot of other issues there. And so it's very, very curious. I know Mr. Edwards, they were in attendance, and he had some things to throw in there about house meetings. So we'll go ahead and start with this.
Well, you know, it was kind of deja vu, Don, to hear the presentation actually being made jointly as a partnership, which is not a new word as it pertains to dismantling of the African-American community throughout Minneapolis, particularly in North Minneapolis. The presentation was a kind of a powder puff presentation. I think their real intention was to try to get through the meeting in about 45 to 50 minutes. The head of Mortenson or, you know, was there. Lynn Littlejohn, who has carried a lot of water for Mortenson and told a lot of fairy tales to the African-American community, was there. The school district, there were no board members there. All I saw were paid staff. But the genesis of the meeting was to convince us, the community that was there, that found out about it because notification was very, very limited, that there was this partnership going on and that this was part of community participation. And what happened with me, Don, it made me go back almost, in fact, a decade, a little over 10 years ago, when we were hearing from a company called McCormick Barron of St. Louis, Missouri. In fact, I think they do business. I think their offices are still at 1101 Lucas Boulevard in St. Louis, Missouri. McCormick Barron was big in the housing industry, had gotten a lot of federal money over the prior 15 years or thereabouts. And they came in working closely with then council member Jackie Cherryholm, who a couple years before had ousted the first black councilman in the history of the city of Minneapolis, the late and beloved Van White. And starting really in 1992, they started putting together the plan for the reconfiguration, really, of the African-American community, particularly in North Minneapolis. And by 2001, almost 10 years later, they had it in place. Starting in 1996-97, the City Council started enacting legislative initiatives which put into place, first of all, the destruction of public housing, which had been in place since 1937 in North Minneapolis, and the forced removal or relocation of a public housing project or public housing population, which was about, at that time, still about 75% African Americans. There was also supposed to be a right of return provision, which never happened. But it became a windfall not only for the city, but for a lot of outlying suburbs who allegedly were going to provide, with federal financial assistance, was going to provide housing for these displaced black folks, okay? It never happened. Now, the housing was built, in many different suburbs, and we have a list. If someone challenges us, then we'll read the list over the air.
Yes.
We have a list of the many housing developments that came into being, some which got significant subsidies as an outgrowth of the removal, if you will, forced removal of African Americans from not only the public housing known as Glenwood, Lyndale, Sumner, but also some surrounding housing that was also tied into the entire scheme, the purchase of the parcels and et cetera. In fact, I was just reviewing before we went on the air a specific document, which is the agreement, the actual agreement that came into play, that was in fact the essence, if you will, of the agreement. It talked in terms of the entities that were supposed to preside over and protect the interest of the community, including African Americans, etc. Never happened. Chaired by a woman by the name of Carol Batsell Benner. Natanya Johnson was on there, Natalie Johnson Lee, Bill English, people like that. They were supposed to make sure that the implementation of the agreement with respect to diversity and all those kinds of things was adhered to. This had been put in place by those of us who were, and I had become a member of the Near North Side Implementation Committee by virtue of the fact that I was the chair of the Housing Committee of the NAACP, you know, before they banished me. And so, you know, on that committee, by the way, the Near North Side Implementation Committee was Mayor Sharon Sales Belton, Council President Cherry Holmes, a gentleman by the name of Bradley, a gentleman by the name of Kramer, who was the council member, yours truly, a guy by the name of Goodman, Mary Anderson, McCorvey, O'Brien, that was Kathy O'Brien, Olson, and so there was a whole group of us that for about 2 years battled with each other to make sure that there was a doctrine of fairness. Unfortunately, when the NAACP bailed out, we actually went into federal court. We had a series of hearings before now soon to retire Judge Rosenbaum, who I think was very fair. Unfortunately, based on the law that he was operating under, if he would have closed the project down to allow for some corrective action, the NAACP would have had to post a bond of $35 million, and of course, obviously, the NAACP and them didn't have
that. Now, real quick here. One of the names you mentioned, and this person didn't want a maximum security prison built north of Minneapolis.
You're breaking up a little bit in my headset. But I think you were asking about a minimum security facility, and you said in North Minneapolis? Back in the very late 80s, Mr. English was involved in proposing the building of a minimal security facility in North Minneapolis. Yeah, you're absolutely correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. Community basically beat that back, indicating that certainly wasn't something that folks were interested in. There were more positive things that could be done and should be done as it pertains to the economic uplift of North Minneapolis. But yes, that was proposed. That's interesting that you asked that.
Well, since we're talking about public housing here,
we're getting real bad interference. I'm not picking up at all.
Okay, we do this. Houses will be better. Mr. Edwards.
Yeah.
Okay. I just keys on here. You should be able to hear me a little bit better. How's that?
Not good, Don. We got some storm activity over us, and I'm really not. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Edwards?
Okay, that's better. Obviously, you went to a different frequency. Go ahead.
Quick. Give me
30 seconds here.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay, there you go. Much better.
Okay. What I was going to say is what we're talking about here is the Heritage Park, which was supposed to be low-income housing.
Oh, by the way, let me correct something on that.
Okay.
All court documents indicate it's not Heritage Park. I mean, I'm because many folks aren't familiar. In the court documents, it is Holman. Okay. It is named for the lady who in 1990 brought the action in the federal court. She sued the then Secretary of HUD, Andrew Cuomo, and it was Lucy Holman versus the United States government. She is a great hero, if you will, who was, you know, seriously violated in retaliatory manner by the late 1990s. But that project, all legal documents, is Holman, the Holman Project, not
Holman
Heritage Park.
Okay, and in the Holman Project here, I have this document. If listeners want to actually go to our – you're at the site because if you're listening to this show, you're actually right there on our site. But we've actually posted the Near North Side Operation and Management Strategy, also the Near North Side Master Plan. And for the Holman housing, they were supposed to have public housing units, a number of units, 200, other tax credit units, 90, and market rate rental units, 150.
There you go. Okay.
And so within the 440 units of rental housing, the mix will be 45% public, just like a 45% public, 20% other tax credit household, affordable to households at or below 60% area median income, and 34.1% market rate. This the unit mix is summarized by, again, the 200 public housing units, the 90 tax credit units, and the 150 market rate units. Did that ever happen?
No, it did not. And, in fact, I'm going to cite for our listening audience a Pacific meeting that took place. What happened is, though, by court order, the Near North Side Implementation Committee had been created. And an example I'm looking at here in studio, agenda of a meeting we had on August 18th, 2000, in room 333 City Hall from 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon. Mayor presiding, Mayor Sharon Sales Belton. But what happened was a counter shadow committee called the Near North Side Community Agency Heads was put together to counter some of the governance that the implementation committee was involved in. And on June 14th, 2000, City Hall Room 321 from 3 to 4 p.m., there was a Pacific meeting to discuss the necessary obstruction of some of those provisions that you just cited minutes ago. Clearly to obstruct that, how to obstruct it, who to use, who to utilize in helping to obstruct that. Now, that was a part, that clandestine kind of activity was a part of how we got the attention of the federal court about 4 years later and came very close to shutting the project down until a corrective action could be taken commensurate with the agreement that you made reference to earlier, which is a part of the entire court process. In fact, let me just run this down for people that wanted to look in. The initial law firm was a firm called Klein and White. They were attorneys at law located at 4570 West 77th Street in Minneapolis. Tom White later was disbarred. And part of the reason he was disbarred was because of his questionable conduct, which actually came to the attention of Judge Rosenbaum, who took an appropriate action, if you will. But Tom White and a man by the name of Jack Kane had been the attorneys, you know, hired by the NAACP back around 1997 and 96, because the NAACP had received in 1992 $86,000 to monitor the beginning of the redevelopment. They received $80-some thousand. They were supposed to use that money to do monitoring, et cetera, and report to the courts and et cetera. Part of that didn't happen. We had a big battle in 1998 on that, and that's how yours truly became the housing chair for a period of time until I was expelled from the NAACP for raising too many questions.
Here, just a second here.
Yes, sir.
And I just want to let our callers know. Hold on.
We got a call.
Oh, jeez.
I just want to let our callers know that they can call in at 1-877-572-4288. Again, that number is 1-877-572-4288.
Okay.
Okay. And I am getting some callers in. So I think someone is listening. I just want to let people know, if you're calling on your phone to listen, you'll get bumped off in about 2 minutes, and it kind of holds up from the other callers. So go to your computer, go to www.theguruanddon.com, and go ahead and log in.
Okay. By the way, Don, you've been making reference to the document identified as the Minneapolis Near Northside Redevelopment Document, Phase 1 Development Agreement, and there are other components to that. By the way, be advised that in this document, to our listening audience, is that $800,000 was paid out to McCormick Barron and Legacy Management, which is Legacy Management is the same entity that is now allegedly partnering with Mortenson to build the so-called headquarters of the Minneapolis School District.
Yes.
Which, by the way, I don't think the school district has the actual funding. And so they're going to be doing some tax credits and some other things. And I know that you've been researching this and have talked to a couple people who are very much aware of, you know, how investments go and et cetera. And maybe, you know, we just bring our audience up to speed on how that's going, because the pattern that's emerging here is exactly the same pattern, though the school district's building is lesser money by hundreds of millions. But it's the same modus operandi, the same pattern, if you will, where the bottom line, though, is that the African-American community gets no access, gets no employment, gets none of the frills, the fringes, or anything else.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I was talking to an appraiser and a gentleman who does a lot of finance here in town, and it's very interesting what he had to say, because, number one, you remember that night that when we were there at the meeting and I asked them point blank, why don't they put up a $25 million bond just in case they don't, which would be surrenderable or forfeited if they don't make their goals? And also I asked them, why don't they have a community benefit agreement, you know, something that benefits the community? And Miss Littlejohn had no idea. You know, all she said, well, there's no community benefit agreement. Well, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, because that's not what you're thinking about. But in the Holman, comparing to the Holman project, I'm looking at Section 3, Minority Women Business and Employment Participation Plan. They're talking about 25% minority-owned business, 10% women-owned business, workforce goals, 33% minority, skilled or unskilled, and 5% female. And so listening to them Thursday night at the Capri Theater, it's obvious that, you know, they have no intention and the deal is already cut. Because, first of all, this is just what I was talking to these financial wizards about. You have to have some kind of tax break in that whole arena. You know, you have millions of dollars going out. Of course, Councilman Samuels is not, for Fifth Ward, he's not going to make North Minneapolis a fair tax zone.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is they need a nonprofit, and the nonprofit will run off that empowerment zone money to the project and all the taxes to the project, so which means that Legacy, Mortenson, and whoever else becomes involved walks away with almost 90%, if not more, profit.
Don, let me hold your thought there again for our listening audience. It's interesting that you brought that up. I'm looking right now as we are on air at a document that comes from the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority, and it's ironic that you happen to raise that, because this is a particular meeting in which, again, a discussion with respect to how there would be clandestine funding with tax dollars, and that basically McCormick Barron and Legacy would not have to go into their pockets. For those that want to call it up, and I'm well reminded of the excellent job that the current president of the NAACP, Mr. Booker T. Hodges, did with going back into the records. On October 18, 2001, there was a memorandum from a Leslie A. Woley, spelled W-O-Y-E-E. She, at that time, was the employment coordinator and Section 3 coordinator. It goes to your question about Section 3. In this document, she laid out a very clandestine plan of how information, number one, could be circumvented, and how tax credits and other provisions could be brought into play, and how it was not necessary, even though she was the coordinator for the Section 3 program, that how they could get around the inclusion of our community, the African-American community, in the Section 3 provisions. I want to produce that date again. It's a memorandum to the Community Oversight Committee members that I named prior that included Natanya Johnson, Carol Batzell, Natalie Johnson Lee, Bill Ingalls, people like that, dated October 18, 2001. Okay? And by the way, the Pacific coordinator was a young man by the name of Darrell Washington. For those that maybe remember back in those days, I'm quite sure you remember Mr. Washington. I think it's important now, as we will do throughout this program, that we begin to cite the documents. Because, you know, if you don't, you get these threatening phone calls and such things as that. Yeah. And leaders and ministers run out and run around and talk in terms that you are not doing that. Now, the Pacific document and discussion took place on Tuesday, October 18, 2001, at the Sumner Library Meeting Room from 2 to 4. And I've already named for you some of the people that were involved. In fact, the city had its legal representative there. Ms. Carol Lansing of the city attorney's office at that time was there when this discussion took place. And it gives you kind of an understanding, sir, of the kind of clandestine activities that were going on to just rip and to rape the communities of color, and particularly African-American communities, from not enjoying any of the benefits that were in documents that were being circulated as far back as 1992, and the kind of stories that they told to Judge Rosenbaum in 2004.
Exactly. And the handout that they had at the top of it was called The Right Team. With Legacy, Thor, Mortensen, and that couple other groups that appear in these documents, especially in the Northside Operation and Management Strategic Plan. And like I said, I put all this stuff up on the Blog Talk Radio website because you can print it out as a PDF. And they also go as far as posting the Glenwood Avenue near Northside preliminary market assessment for commercial development.
Yes.
Now, this we're talking June 2000. It's June 2010. Okay, and none of this stuff has happened. Zero, absolutely zero. The neighborhood retailing service on Glenwood Avenue, I see nothing. Automobile-oriented retailing, nothing on Glenwood Avenue. Furnishing and interior mart, nothing on Glenwood Avenue.
Absolutely.
Industrial and warehousing, nothing. So they spend a lot of time, Mr. Edwards, putting together these strategic plans to bamboozle, obstruct, and deny opportunity for a targeted group or race of individuals. And you just talked about the meeting at Sumner Olson Library, and I'm actually looking at the pictures they put together as pieces of propaganda of different people. I'm looking at it right here. I'm saying,
right.
Wow.
Right.
I printed up like 100 pages of this report, and I can't accept this, but I'm going to have to, because this was done back in what it goes from 89 to about 2000. The number of different reports that were done and studies about how great the urban redevelopment was. It's going to be a new quality. They talk about the proximity to downtown, how convenient. And one big point they made in the themes for the near Northside marketing plan was the diversity with so many different cultures. We will target a positive impact of culture of a diverse community by including diverse organizations and leaders in our marketing effort. You know, which sounds like to me, Mortensen, Thor, Ackerberg Group, Jackie Cherry Homes,
right,
and a couple of other usual suspects over there that always come to the table, and it seems like, well, let's just go back to the now occurring Heritage Park.
Yes.
is the city of Minneapolis even getting a nickel a month for that? From what I had looked at here, it looks like Barron and McCormick.
McCormick Barron
has
Kevin McCormick is the principal partner. Mm-hmm.
So he has like what, 60-year lease on the place there, and so
yep.
And so
and jurisdiction ended after 6 years after the so-called final payments were made as it pertains to the actual construction and development. Though they did some additional construction, as folks know, on the south side of Olson Highway in close proximity to International Market Square. Call people's attention to they're welcome to go down to the clerk of the federal court here in Minneapolis and to ask for the transcripts and et cetera of the case known as Holman versus first it was Como and then Cisneros, if you will. As well as the appeals and et cetera that were provided by the city of Minneapolis. Cora McCorvey, the head of the housing authority, played just a dastardly role in, quote-unquote, the forced migration of African Americans out of the city, if you will, and it's probably one of the reasons for, you know, so much of the disorganization and anger and et cetera. The key is, Don, the documentation is there. It's
yes.
just a question if people have really the heart to go and take a look at it. And I think our responsibility here is on point is continue to cite the documentation. Now, we have opened the vault for those that want to tune in and listen and be upset. We have opened the vault. We will begin to distribute the information and the names and et cetera. You said it just minutes ago. Same cast of characters, usual suspects, as was said in the movie Casablanca.
Yeah, and here also, I'm looking at the executive summary, and I just want to shoot out the first paragraph here. This is the executive summary, and this is a proposal from the National Trust Main Street Center in 1785 Massachusetts Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C., and it also has on here executive summary, how this proposal can benefit the near north side. Now, again, we're talking about the Holman slash now currently Heritage Park. It says McCormick Barron near Northside Minneapolis project is exciting. This is much. It sounds much like the school. The wording for the school board's referendum when they were pushing that through in 2008. Okay.
Right.
It says a historically depressed area of the city will become a vibrant and attractive neighborhood for a diverse population. The new multifamily and single family homes will invite families and singles looking for a high quality of life in a closed neighborhood. One compliment to the planned community will be a great neighborhood retail service opportunity. Okay, this is what they're saying. And what happened? I mean, and this is dated here, May 19th, 2000.
Now, let me just say again, and repeating for by the fourth or fifth time as it pertains to the documentation, when required to confirm that and affirm that, both confirm and affirm, before the federal court and the hearings before Judge Rosenbaum, all of that fell apart. In fact, there is another report that people can gain access to if they're interested, and it is the investigation by HUD of the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority and Cora McCorvey and the violations of the agreement that you have made, you and I have both made reference to earlier in this conversation, signed way back in 2000, and negotiated as early as 1998 with the city council. That report, that investigative report, which is a investigative summary, was extremely critical. The only problem is that when the plaintiffs, in this case for Holman, for Lucy Holman, petitioned the federal court for an extension, Cora McCorvey, the city of Minneapolis, Archie Ryback, and others fought a tenacious fight to block extension. And the court ultimately decided, because it actually all went all the way up to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, which sits both here and in St. Louis, interesting enough, and the decision was made not to extend jurisdiction. And that has become the problem that now confronts everyone. And then, of course, as I said 20 minutes ago, once the NAACP was pressured out as a watchdog by virtue of the $35 million bond having to be posted That pretty well took care of everything as it pertains to a watchdog, if you will. By the way, let me just do something quickly on this, because you and I both heard in the meeting at the Capri Theater at Dog and Pony Show, the question came up based on the question that you had asked about the posting of a surety bond if there was a failure to meet the MBE goals, the minority business and women business enterprise goals, and et cetera. And what Mr. Burns said of the school administration office was that there was some consideration. As you know, we raised the question in that meeting, which you have captured on YouTube, about when was the insurance and the bonding going to be posted. Now, Mortensen stood there in the Capri Theater Thursday night and said that that would be something they'd get back to us with. Now, demolition, I've taken a look at the demolition schedule. Demolition starts no later than the second week in October. Under Minnesota law, you must have everything in place with respect to your bids and et cetera for bonding and insurance. And so for those that are out there, such as the investment person that you talked to in the last couple of days, I think that they would fully concur with us, is that such things as your insurance and bonding to make sure that the integrity and the liability of the project is protected should already be in place, because technically the Minneapolis School District commences the beginning of the construction with the demolition of the Broadway School the first week, no later than the second week in October. Yet we were talked to as a African-American community as if we were a bunch of fools by Mortensen and some members of the school district administration.
Exactly. And it was a rotten shame, but I ended up taking a picture of you remember earlier, Mr. Edwards, you had said that, you know, it's just lucky we caught wind of what was going on.
Yes, yes.
And it's really funny because they had name tags made for everybody that they wanted to attend this community forum or meeting.
Right,
okay?
Correct.
When you invite the community, you don't make name tags for 40 people. And that's it. So
okay.
Missing from the name tags, from the pictures that I took here, were Randy Statton, Ezell Jones, and Linda Higgins, Stu Ackerberg, and a couple other folks here.
Okay.
Kind of, I don't have my glasses on. It was kind of blurry, but there's two other people on that particular picture.
Okay.
And but getting back, and we have to tell people and position this. This is another example of how the black community in North Minneapolis is ran over, befuddled, bamboozled by these usual suspects selling this to us. And this is no different than the black folks in Africa selling tribe members to the whites to bring them over to America to be slaves.
That's right. Placed in bondage. Mm-hmm.
This is the same thing. It's just a new day. So we don't. Then again, you had mentioned this, you know, a couple of days ago. We don't have a think tank or a group of researchers that can be on top of this, that understand that if you don't understand the procedure, how can you address it?
Thank you.
So we can't go to the Minneapolis Urban League. We can't go to the African American Men Project. We can't
or the Council on Black Minnesotans, right.
Well, we should be able to go to the Council on Black Minnesotans and say, hey, what is this process? Can you explain this, how this nonprofit Catalyst, brand new, comes into the picture and they end up on every project when there's 200-plus nonprofits in North Minneapolis? Some of them are brick-and-mortar nonprofits that can probably do the same thing that Catalyst is doing. And how does this happen? But again, I spoke with Mr. Lucky Rosenblum several times, and he said when you get in those meetings with the Council on Black Minnesotans, they start arguing with each other. They're one up in each other. They're like, and you know, he's a good Republican, and I like him, and he goes in there and talks about, you know, plans or moving forward or doing the right thing, and they want to talk about, well, I had lunch Saturday at Shishi LeBlanc, or I got a new Rolex, and you know, quit one up and get together and come out with some information. Now, I've been over there to their office on University.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I've been there, I go talk to two people, try to. Those two people, the point person and then the head of it, Mr. Collins, they've not been in the office one time in the 12 times in the last 2 years I've been over there. Not once.
And I've had other people tell me exactly the same thing, and I think that it's definitely a tragedy. Because, you know, based on, and we talked about it last week, and we're generating additional discussions here in the Twin Cities, that very devastating report about the absence of employment opportunity for African Americans here in the metropolitan area has served just the reverse, if you will, of what you would think about a normal community. There is basically no discussion going on here. The white media did an editorial, kind of indicated what our thinking and crafted and shaped our thinking, which I don't buy. We've heard nothing from the leadership. We've heard nothing from our two state representatives. We've heard nothing from the U.S. congressman. We've heard nothing from our two United States senators, Klobuchar and Franken. And you look at what's happening out here. I mean, we are in the midst of a bloodbath here in the Twin Cities, particularly Minneapolis. You know, homicides, assaults, shootings, and et cetera are up significantly. I was looking at a report, which we don't have time today, but we will come back and deal with it. It's another one of these reports that we pulled up. It was something put together at the time that William McManus was chief of police here. It talked about a strategic crime fighting plan, which has been dusted off and is now being used at this particular point in time. Don, I also want to, you know, we got about 12 minutes left. I do not want to lose, because I've had inquiries being made out of New Orleans and other places for the last couple of years.
Oh, yes.
About a program that was operational here in Minnesota, in which a large number of African Americans were transported really from New Orleans to northern Minnesota to a place called Fort Ripley or Camp Ripley. And I have decided, Don and I have talked this over, we have been reviewing a report, a very interesting report, that was submitted by a committee called the Hospitality Subcommittee, Minnesota's Hurricane Katrina. If you can find it posted anywhere, good luck, though we have the copies in our hands. But one of the things that disturbed me greatly back then in 05 was that this camp was used, Camp Ripley was used by the National Guard and the military with the concurrence of some of our ecumenical leadership here in our city for indoctrination of African Americans being brought up out of New Orleans.
Yes.
Now, I think a lot of people want us to forget about it, but there were some, quote-unquote, out there who are listening to us right now. We're in the meeting at Redeemer Church in September of 05 when they were addressed by Major Morris of the Minnesota National Guard, who laid out the expectations of bringing these African Americans, particularly young people, here for indoctrination. And it's one of the reasons that there was an outbreak a year later of hostile actions and shootings and et cetera, because many of these people were brought in and were given indoctrination similar to what happened in South Korea after the conflict in the 1970s. So I would be remiss in the memory of some of those African Americans who lost their lives and some who cannot be found, who were internees called evacuees at Camp Ripley. The documentation is there. At some point, we will identify who the chair of the hospitality subcommittee was, and we will take a look at the breakdown of the specific disciplines that were in place in which people were required to go through, including examinations on the issues of mental health and then the delivery of certain mind-altering drugs.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting. And one thing also I want to let you know, you just hit on it for a minute ago there. You're talking about some of our political leaders. Well, you know, we have, just real quick here, Congressman Ellison, black, Bobby Joe Champion, black, Jeff Hayden, black, Councilmember Don Samuels, black, and then we have Mayor R.T. Ryback, who I say is a misrepresentation of Obamanism. But we have a group of politicians here that should be in the best interest. And one thing I want to talk about real quick is that, you know,
the city of Minneapolis just installed bike racks all over the city of Minneapolis except for North Minneapolis.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And the program is called Nice Ride. And so in a recent article here last week on Secrets of the City titled Why No Nice Ride in North Minneapolis, State Representative Bobby Joe Champion decided to get up and say, we're a part of Minneapolis. We're hop and skip from downtown. How come there's no bikes or bike racks in North Minneapolis? And this is the first amount of noise that we've heard out of State Representative Champion about anything other than at the Juneteenth festival last week, he came up to me and tried to get me to put one of them 58B name tags on. And I says, you know, me as a blogger, I don't want to really support anybody, but because I want to report on everybody.
Absolutely.
And so I didn't want to wear, you know, no offense to him. We kind of grew up here in the Twin Cities, and, you know, he was the choir director, and wherever we went to see choirs sing, things like that. But this is what I said. You know, I had written a story about that, the fear of a healthy and wealthy black Minneapolis with new leaders. And,
all right.
And the thing is, why aren't we getting a reasonable consideration from our black elected officials? I mean, they know that this federal money is coming down. Bobby Joe, I can call him Bobby. Bobby sits on the Minnesota House of Representatives. He's also the vice chair of Minnesota's Transportation and Finance Policy Division.
Right.
You know, federal money just doesn't come down the pipe, with especially for anything transportation-wise, unless he gets a memo on his desk.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
And so, again, you look back on this, and just by Mayor R.T. Rybeck saying that, you know, this is funded primarily by private and federal dollars, well, he just blocked North Minneapolis of participation with federal dollars, okay? Now, if he wants to take it to another level, we have to look at Executive Order 1126246, which prohibits, you know, the exclusion of people from all walks of life based on religion, sex, national origin, race, and color to participate, even putting those bike racks there. Where is that report from the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights that said how the compliance played out in this?
Absolutely. I think that's an excellent point. It's just too bad that State Representative Champion did not spend a little time telling us about the meeting over in St. Paul on last Friday, the 18th of June, in which the plan was put together as it pertains to how the light rail is going to be built. And there again in the discussion, which Mortensen was involved in, they kind of forgot to mention that to us Thursday night, thinking we didn't know, that one of the things that they've done is attempted to address a issue that has been brought out by us bloggers, if you will, about the falsification of payroll records and Social Security numbers. And there was a heavy influx of Hispanic Latinos at this meeting on the 18th of June, in which they were given a course in how to prepare the right kind of payroll documentation.
Yes.
And I just wonder if there wasn't some kind of conflict of interest with respect to that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And Mr. Edwards, we have a caller here. Let's see if we can get him on here.
All right, go ahead.
Hello, you're on there live on Blog Talk Radio. This is Don and Ron. Can we help you?
Yeah, I like what you guys are talking about there.
Oh, it's our old favorite guest. Hey, how you doing, sir?
Billy Joe. Hey, Billy Joe, out of Tennessee. Wherever. So go ahead. How you doing, brother? What's your question?
A lot of stuff going on in your community there. Are you guys going to help solve some of the problems there?
Well, we're going to attempt to, because Mr. Edwards was just talking about this light rail and this meeting on the 18th. Now, Mr. Edwards, as my part to that, as we handed off the baton as we do, I called over there to the Met Council, and I said, can you please send me that flyer from that meeting last week? Well, they slipped up, and they sent me the flyer for the meeting July 7th, 2010, which is directly addressed to the American Indian Business and Employment Workshop,
okay,
where that's going to be at from 5 to 7 p.m. They just got some free advertisement on Minnesota's Chippewa Tribe Center over there on 13th and Franklin. So they're going to say they have learned about minority-owned and women's small business inclusion programs. Now, we're talking inclusion programs again from MnDOT all the way here to the Met Council, which, if you go back in history, what year in the last 20 years have they even made compliance? according to some basic numbers?
They have not until the question, which is an appropriate question by the caller, that we can only do what it is that we do as journalists, bloggers, and et cetera. We head up no organizations. If we don't belong to any of the so-called powerful organizations like the Black Coalition, the Council of Churches, or the Black Leadership Conference. We don't belong to the Council on Black Minnesotans. We are not, walking or running mates with the Congressman Ellison and et cetera. And so there's only so much we can do, but I think it's an appropriate question to continuously to be asked, because the thing that we will do and that we are doing here on Point is that, sir, we will continue to keep the information flowing.
Well, it's, there's an article in the Star Tribune about 2 weeks ago. Black unemployment rate is, second in the country behind Detroit? And any of the leaders talking about this?
Actually, sir, we just talked about that minutes ago. Actually, the unemployment differential is we're number one in the United States, unfortunately. Three times the number of African Americans go unemployed as opposed to whites. 20.6 to 3 to 6 points. 20.8, sir, to 6.6. That's a 3.1 times difference. To your specific question, Mr. Allen and I just got through, as we did last week, raising the question on why there is not a discussion going on, why a series of emergency meetings have not been called, why leadership is not demanding access to both the governor's office and certainly to Minneapolis City Hall and St. Paul City Hall. But there's only, sir, so much that you can do. But we have done what we could. But I am shamed, let me say this, sir, to you, and we see that you're calling us from a southern state, so you must be having fun
Tennessee.
With us. We picked up on that. I am ashamed to be in a liberal enclave like Minnesota and see the kind of suffering that African Americans and others of color are going through. I am shamed by that, but that does not mean that I will forfeit my commitment to continue to try to bring the information forward, but... You know, I don't know that there's some states maybe down there where you're at. I don't think that there's leadership in Memphis and Chattanooga and Nashville, Knoxville, that would allow that kind of information to go uncontested. But up here,
there's a strong NAACP down here. What about your deputy sheriff there, Booker Isaacs? What is he doing? Why am I coming to
President? Yeah, you'd have to try to find out from him. I he wrote a couple articles. He exposed a couple things, which I think were good, but then we haven't heard anything in the last month and a half, and we definitely need to hear from him. We need to hear from the NAACP. We are in big trouble here in Minnesota. Contrary to what the so-called truth squads that are put together by the corporations are saying around the country, down in your part of the country, we know they were in Atlanta. We know they were in Birmingham and Miami, but we are in big trouble here. Our community is hurting beyond imagination, and I think Mr. Allen is signaling to me we're going to have to break it off. We're coming up on the two-minute mark, but I appreciate your call, sir.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yes.
Billy Bob. Boy, I tell you, yeah.
We have about a minute left here, and I'd like to wrap up here real quick by saying you can read Mr. Ron Edwards' column in the Spokesman Recorder every week, and that's the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. And then on Sundays at 5 o'clock in Minneapolis on Channel 17, it's Black Focus, is hour-long program. Goes into detail about some issues and breaking news that you will only hear on that show. And you can also always read the Independent Business News Network, which is www.ibnnnews.com. That's ibnnnews.com, all one word. We'll be back next Saturday here at 5 p.m., the same time. And I think, Mr. Edwards, we got just under a minute here. I think that we should try to get some of these people to call in next week. Some of these Point people putting all this stuff together. Maybe Miss Little John.
I send that challenge out to them. And also, and I hope they do. Also, let me say that we certainly want to thank our sponsors out of Canada, Toronto.
Yes. Yep.
Because if it were not for them, we would not be able to have this kind of independence. But, Don, I think we need to work on that. And, again, My humble thanks to our listening audience.
Yep, thank you very much, and this has been an episode of On Point.
Call you.
What kind of a horse is that? I've never seen a horse like that before.
No, and never will again, I fancy. There's only one of him in Egypt. He's the horse of a different color you've heard tell about.
Ha, 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 ho, 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 and a couple of tra-la-las. That's how we laugh a day away in the many old land of Oz. Boo, 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 chirp, 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 and a couple of la-dee-da.